Hey everybody, welcome to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm your host, Britton Bickerstaff, and joining me this week on the show is Carol Ann Lieros. Carol Ann has been a professional psychic, lecturer, workshop presenter, and author for more than 40 years. She has appeared on international TV, hundreds of radio shows. She appeared in the movie Inner Spaces, and has also been a speaker for Edgar Cayce's ARE for over 25 years. She has worked for business leaders, psychotherapists, senior corporate executives, health organizations, spiritual groups, and churches, designing workshops, meditations, innovative psychic techniques, intuitive programs, and much, much more. As the subject of psychic research, her accuracy over a two-year study was 93% to 97% in predicting the future. Her latest book out now is entitled Edgar Cayce on Auras and Colors and is co-authored by the CEO of the Association for Research and Enlightenment, Kevin Todeschi. In this book, herself and Kevin teaches readers to access their intuitive self to see auras and explores colors and auras with practical tools for understanding that can be applied to your everyday life. She will be presenting the program You Are Psychic, the Legacy Conference from March 17th through the 22nd. Of 2014, and that's here in Virginia Beach. You can learn more about her on her website at carolannlieros.com. That's carolannlieros.com. I hope y'all enjoy my interview with Carol Ann Lieros. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Carol. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Great. Glad to have you here. And I understand that you have a great story about how you kind of first became a part of the ARE family. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. The ARE has held a special place in my heart for many, many years, about 40 years, because it was Hugh Lynn that really started my career. I was 29 years old and suddenly discovered, which is a whole other story, that I could do these psychic things, although up till that time I thought it was a gift that some people had and the rest of us did not, and
right.
That certainly is not true. But anyway, I was then having daily experiences, and some of them I understood and some I didn't, and I heard that Hugh Lynn was going to be speaking at Rosary Hill College in Buffalo, New York. So I thought, well, maybe he can give me some insights into what's happening to me now. And so I went to the lecture, and there were about 400 people there. And after the lecture, he very graciously agreed to answer questions. So I had a million of them, as they say. And I raised my hand, and I said, what does it mean if? And I described, and he answered, and no one else raised their hand, so I raised mine again. Finally, other people began raising their hands. But by the questions I asked, he could tell I was having some unusual experiences.
Right.
So afterwards, he came up to me and he said, would you like to go and have coffee with the president of the college, who at that time was a Franciscan nun, and the woman who's going to be the director of the Human Dimensions Institute to be housed at Rosary Hill College, which was going to do research in parapsychology and spiritual matters and so on, and the board of directors of the college and of the Human Dimensions Institute, and I said, yes. So over coffee, after talking to me, he suggested that Sister Justa, who was a Franciscan nun, begin incorporating me into a research that she was starting 2 weeks from then. And she was going to be the director of research at the Human Dimensions Institute, and she was doing some research with a healer by the name of Oscar Estebani. And her particular area of interest was enzymes in the body, in the body.
Right.
And so she was going to have Oscar Estebani hold a tube of test tube with the damaged enzyme trypsin in it, have him hold it, do whatever he did internally for healing, and then, you know, she had college students and all kinds of, controls, et cetera. And so I found myself at a Roman Catholic college sitting at a nun's desk in her office and with a tape recorder in front of me, and people would come in and they'd hand me something because I discovered I could do psychometry, holding an object that belongs to another person and using that to tune into them. And so these people I never saw before would come in, sit down, I'd look at them, and I'd think, okay, what kind of a story can I make up about this person? And I would make up this story, and they would be nodding and so on, and they'd ask questions. And, it turned out that the stories that I was making up were stories of their life and what they were going through, or, you know, what was going to be happening to them, etc. And I remember so clearly, one woman came in, and I forgot what she handed me, let's say her watch, and I began to have pains in my back, and I said, well, I can't continue the reading. I said, I'm in so much pain. She said, where's your pain? So I showed her in my back where it was. She said, well, that's what I'm here for, because when some of the people came for the readings, they would then go into another part of Justice's office, and Oscar Estefani would do the laying on of hands healing. And what I was picking up, apparently, was what she was there for, something in her spine. And as she acknowledged it, it went away. And oh, wow. So I found that happened several times over that time. Well, I was supposed to be there 2 weeks while she was working with Estefani, but I was there for 8 weeks. And it soon became clear that I was able to not only do the process, but because of Gemini rising in my astrology chart, I'm able to analyze it. And so the researchers that she was working with were very interested in analyzing, or not analyzing so much, but asking me, well, what are you doing when you're doing psychometry, or what are you doing when you say you see, and so on and so forth. So I was there for 8 years, and the subject of research, and I helped Douglas Dean design a precognition experiment, because that seems to be one of the things that I'm most accurate at, is precognition. And then I began to teach with Douglas Dean other people at the college how to pay attention to, recognize, respect, and apply their own psychic ability or their own intuition. And so, thanks to Hugh Lynn, my life took a whole turn around. Up until that time, I was a normal person, raising three children, nothing, never had a psychic experience in my life until I was 29. And anyway, so that's why my children, who are in their 50s now, my children went to the ARE camp. My daughter's children went to the ARE camp. My great-granddaughter went to the ARE camp. So the ARE holds a really large area in my heart.
That's wonderful. Wow. What a great story. Thank you for sharing.
Yes, I owe it all to Hugh Lynn. I mean, he always said he didn't have psychic ability, but obviously he did.
Right, right. Yeah. And Edgar Cayce made it very clear that everybody does. It's just a matter of tapping into it in the right way.
That's correct. That's paying attention to it, recognizing it, you know, respecting it, and then applying it. Because just not applying it, it's worthless.
Right, exactly. And I understand that you have been a speaker for the past 25 years, basically since this happened with Hugh Lynn and kind of you took off with it. I'm sure you've covered a range of topics in that time. Do you have any favorite topics or any favorite experiences at the ARE?
Yeah, so many of them. Actually, there's so many, I don't know where to begin. But my interest is the practical application of our psychic abilities. So I was put together with Henry Reed, who is a psychologist,
right.
And they suggested that we design a class together. So we designed this class, and I love to have themes for my classes because I think it makes them more interesting. And so we had this theme of the Legacy Conference, you know, Be Your Own Psychic, the Legacy Conference. And the premise of that was that Edgar Cayce had passed on this rich legacy to us of thousands, tens of thousands of readings that helped so many people, we don't even know how many, et cetera. And so as Henry and I worked with people over a five-day period all day, they discovered and uncovered and noticed and became aware of how psychic they were. And so my noticing was that people didn't think in terms of, okay, I learned how to do psychometry. It works for me. And they thought it was fascinating, then went home and then forgot about it. And my natural inclination was to say, okay, how would you use this? You're an accountant. Okay, how could you use psychometry in the work that you do? You're a psychologist. How could you use remote viewing in the work that you do? You're a parent. How could you use it in dealing with your children and your family and all relationships? And so what I had people do then each day was a particular technique that I would introduce. I would say, all right, now make a list of how you could apply, massage, change a little bit, this particular technique or experience to use in your life with relationships, with what you do for a living, with your investments, you know, whatever. How can you apply this? So it becomes a marriage, if you will, of the intellect and the intuition. And
right.
So you're using it so in tandem, you don't sit there and say, well, now I'm going to give a reading on this. It becomes so natural then, it naturally flows, and you make more accurate decisions, more beneficial to you.
Right.
And we'll be right back with more from Carol Ann Lieros here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into my interview with Carol Ann Lieros.
That became my real interest. And so then what happened was different groups of people approached me. I remember one class, a doctor came up to me. He had been dragged to the class by his wife, who was, and she didn't want to go alone. And but he came, and he was very cooperative. He was very nice. But he came up, and I had had them bring photographs this particular time of people they knew well. And he came up, and his voice was shaking, and he said, I want to tell you what happened to me. And I said, okay. He had a photograph of a young man who was in shorts and obviously laying in the sun on a chair. And he said, I held this, and I told the woman this was her son. He said, but it's obvious. He looks just like her. And he said, but I kept hearing amputee between everything else I got. And he said, finally, he said, you kept telling us, you know, say everything you get. He said, finally, I said, well, ha, 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 I keep getting the word amputee. And she said, yes, that's right. My son was in a motorcycle accident, and his left leg was amputated. And the doctor was so shook up that his voice was shaking. And I said, well, why are you so nervous? Why are you so surprised? He said, you don't understand. I came here as a non-believer. If someone else in the class had done that, I'd say, oh, they had been talking, and she had mentioned it, and, you know, so I said, but I did it, and it's impossible.
Wow.
The funny part of it was, as a result of taking that conference, why he invited me to teach a parapsychology and medicine class at the Niagara Falls Memorial Medical Center.
Wow.
And he ended up showing doctors how to see auras and encouraged them to take this class and so on. And so there you have, I mean, a very practical application
right.
of psychic ability for a doctor to incorporate that as another tool, you know, x-rays
right.
and tests and all that, and their own intuition, which can save the patient or can save a lot of time, and which could be life-threatening in some cases. And then other people, a real estate person came up and asked me if I would train his salespeople in their own intuition to apply in the work that they do. And then the nurses, and I taught the nurses and so on. So I was very thrilled that people were getting the idea that this isn't something that is, you know, for entertainment and, yeah, I believe that, but, you know, let's get back to the real world. It is something that is another facet of who I am and what I can do and how I can apply it. So it's been very exciting for me because of that.
That's great. Wow. Good for you. So you've had quite a bit of success kind of teaching this to people in the corporate world and teaching
yeah.
meditation, psychic techniques, and intuitive programs.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I work for DuPont. They invited a business partner of mine and I in, and DuPont, International Paper, Mercy Health Systems, you know, and so on. And not only at middle management level, but the upper management level, the executive vice presidential level, the people who make decisions that affect thousands of people and millions of dollars. And so that was another challenge, and I love challenges, so it was exciting for me to do that. I enjoyed it. I had fun doing it. I have fun doing what I'm doing. In fact, I think I mentioned to you that in March, I'm going to be offering that workshop, the Legacy Conference.
Right, yeah.
Yes, from March 17th is the registration, and I'll be lecturing that night. And then it's 5 full days of, you know, a morning session where people will learn to feel the psychic energy, paying attention to that, psychometry, remote viewing, spiritual healing, aura scanning. It's 5 days chock full of experiential kinds of things and getting feedback on what you're doing so you know where you misinterpreted, or it was your imagination, or you were too bashful to say something, and then when the person gave you feedback, you found out, well, I did get that, but I was too, you know, shy to say it. So,
right.
Real intense learning experience.
That's great. And that's from March 17th through the 22nd, and that's going to be here in Virginia Beach next year.
Right.
At the ARE. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, and I'll make sure I get the listeners all the information for that at the end of the show so they can register for that.
It'll be at the Gibbons House, you know, on the ARE grounds there in the back up on the hill. Mm-hmm. Very exciting.
Great. Look forward to that. Edgar Cayce made it very clear that everyone has psychic abilities. So what do you offer to listeners for kind of advice to increase their intuitive and psychic abilities?
Well, of course, you know, excuse me. Meditation is important so that you become very centered. And in being so centered, you can become very focused. And by being focused, our body, we're constantly receiving information.
Right.
But it's usually, you know, kept in our unconscious, so to speak. But when we have a need to know, how do we bring that to the conscious level? Well, it's through meditation, it's through the kind of experiences I just said where you pair off, you have a partner, you get feedback, you know, and so on. And also, I suggest to people, which is something I did, excuse me, is I kept a little notebook with me. And whenever I got an impression, and if I didn't know if it was psychic or my imagination, but I worked with scientists, so I learned to pay attention and verbalize everything. So I would write down what the date was, the time, because I discovered quite often time is important, the time of day that you got the impression, and then exactly how I got it, not my interpretation of it, but if I saw it like the flash of white and I smelled like medicinal smells, I heard the word in pain. I'd write it down exactly as I got it. Then I would leave a space underneath, and I'd write down my interpretation. Then I'd leave a space, and then if something happened in the future, in fact, I told my volunteers, here's, you know, some psychic impressions I got today, and then they would remind me. And then something would happen, and I'd think, wait a minute, that sounds familiar. And I'd look back in my little notebook, and there it would be that a friend of mine or maybe a family member, whoever, decided that if they were going to go into medicine, they wanted to be a nurse or a doctor, and they wanted to help people who were in pain because they had healing ability. And I'd go back to that, and I'd say, that's right. I even couldn't stop thinking about Mary, although I might not have written down, I can't stop thinking about Mary, which would have been my fault, because it was Mary who decided she was going to do that rather than doing something else. And then my volunteers gave me what they call carte blanche, which means that anytime I pick up anything about them, I have their permission to, you know, write it down and tell them, which normally I wouldn't invade someone's privacy. And so I would do that. And then sometimes when I had time, at night I would sit and say, all right, meditate. And then I'd say, what is going to happen of significance in Buffalo, New York in the next 30 days, which is where I happened to live at that time. And then I'd write down my impressions. And then I might even ask, what of significance is going to happen in the United States in the next 30 days. And I'd write down my impressions. And then as the next 30 days evolved, something would crop up or just sort of tickle my memory, and I'd go back to the notebook, and there it was. And that way, I learned many things. Some of them, things like timing. Did I tend to get things 24 hours in advance, 10 days in advance, immediately? How did that work? And I got a lot of symbols I discovered. So then I learned that there were very personal symbols for me, that when that showed up, it meant something particular to me that it might not for someone else. And then there were sort of universal symbols. And so I learned to differentiate also between my imagination, I'll call it, and actual psychic impressions. Now, people who have followed this through, as I suggested to them, discovered that when they got a psychic impression, it was more intense if it came through as a feeling. If it was visual, it was more in color, brighter. Other people discovered just the opposite, that the psychic impression was more nebulous, it wasn't so vivid, and their feelings, again, were more nebulous. So by doing that, keeping that record, you discover those things about yourself, because how it happens to me may or may not happen in a similar way to you.
Right.
Also, I have found over the years, because I've been in this for a long time, I discovered in observing other psychics, hundreds and hundreds of psychics over the years, that sometimes psychics get into this place where they feel everything they say is true. So if the person says to them, well, no, that doesn't fit, no, that isn't right, they'll say, oh, well, that was in a past life. And so by not really monitoring in a very yes-no way, so to speak, they become too enamored with their successes. And then the opposite end of the spectrum, a lot of people are just getting into this, are so critical of themselves that they don't remember when they got, the impression and how it came through, or they get very critical about the way it came through, but by seeing exactly what they wrote and so on, they say, well, yeah, I guess that is true. So it's a really excellent way to learn a lot about your own psychic ability.
Right.
And what areas are you more accurate in? A psychic is inaccurate in all of them. I can't find a lost object if you paid me.
And we'll be right back with more from Carol Ann Lieros here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into my interview with Carol Ann Lieros.
Right.
And, in fact, I usually can't find my own lost object. But then when I worked on some cases with the police, I was able to locate missing people. And so, I learned that about myself. So if someone calls and wants a reading on a lost object, don't waste your time. I discovered that precognition is one of the areas where I'm very accurate. And so another psychic may find that their expertise is finding lost objects, being able to analyze what's wrong with your vehicle, et cetera. So each psychic has areas where they're very good and then areas where they might not be good at all.
Right.
And so each individual finds that out about themselves, too.
Great. Wow.
And usually you're more accurate where you have an interest.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And I also understand that you've written a couple books. Your first book was entitled Intuition Made Easy, and I got a chance to thumb through that wonderful book that has a lot of this stuff that you've talked about in it. Can you tell us a little bit about what the process of how that book came about and the impact that it's had on the feedback that you've gotten from it?
Yes. I wrote the book because people kept asking me to, and I kept saying, well, I'm not a writer, I'm a talker,
Right.
I lecture, I talk, I workshop, but finally someone said, well, okay, tape record all your class, your basic class, And so I did, and then I worked with someone who helped me put it together in the written form, because the written form is very different from the speaking form.
Right.
And so I put it together so someone could take that book, like, a group that maybe wanted to work together, someone who wanted to teach a course, and they could take that book, and it, as you know from reading it, step by step, you could teach people how to do psychometry, even the relaxation, step by step. Everything is step by step, so that anyone could take that book and teach a class with it. And that was my intent when I did it. And so what I found was the feedback was tremendous. You know, people said it worked. I use it all the time. It's so clear, so understandable. It's so simple, and it works. So then people kept saying, well, you know, you got to write another book. And no, I'm not a writer. But then was it about 2 years ago that Kevin Tedeschi first approached me? Anyway, 2 or 3 years, I forgot now. It might be two. Kevin called me and said that the ARE Press wanted a book on auras. And he said, okay, he would write it, but he wanted to have me write it with him. And so he called, and I said, oh, that's exciting. Yes, I like that idea. So he and I collaborated and wrote the book, Edgar Cayce on Auras and Color. And it's got examples of Cayce's experiences with auras and how he interpreted it. It's got the interpretation of the colors. It's got information about how the blind were able to see, not through their eyes, the auras, but through the third eye, through the forehead, middle of the forehead. So it's been a very popular book, I understand.
It is. I was working in the bookstore for a small time, and it flew off the shelves. Both your books, actually. Intuition Made Easy. We had them both featured they were on the front of the bookshelf, and they sell very well. It's wonderful books.
Yeah, in fact, the Kevin called me about a month ago and said that the ARE Press wants to publish my book Intuition Made Easy because I self-published it originally.
Right.
So that will be coming through too.
That's awesome! Wow, that's great. And you talked a bit about auras. For those who aren't familiar with auras, it's well known that Edgar Cayce saw auras. Can you give us a little background about maybe your experience with auras and maybe why not everybody can just see them clearly?
Well, it's like everything else, you know, acting, playing tennis, any sport, anything we do in life. 20 people can try and do the same thing, and some will be good, and some not so good, and some outstanding, and so on. So I think it depends a lot upon, you know, your past life experiences, your motivation. Some people just don't have any motivation to see auras, etc. And then some do naturally. And I remember when I first started at Rosary Hill, which was in 1966 or 67, and Sister Justa asked me, do you see auras? And I said, no, I don't. I had read a lot of the Cayce books at that time, and I was very interested, but I said, no, I don't see auras. And she said, well, what do you see when you look at people? I said, well, I see like a haze or a glow around them. In fact, I even went to the eye doctor to find out if something was wrong with my eyes, and there wasn't. And then I began to see colors, a little bit of colors, and I thought I had, I forgot what it's called, we see colors, auras, not glaucoma, anyway. Nothing wrong with my eyes. And she said, well, look at me, what do you see? I said, well, I see this haze or this glow around you. I said, but there's a break in it, I think it was on her left side. I said, by your left ear and just below your left ear going down, right down into your shoulder, there seems to be a break in the aura there. And she said, well, that's very interesting because I'm going to the chiropractor because I have this, whatever it was with the shoulder and her neck was out and so on. And I said, well, I don't see auras because I sit around everything, around tables and chairs and lamps and so on. At that time, I thought auras were only seen around people. I thought only people had auras. And she said, no, everything is moving molecules and everything has an aura and so on and so forth. So I began to pay more attention to it. And I would practice outside. I particularly found it easy outside, looking at the auras of trees and flowers and plants, And then I would do things like, okay, I'd see this growing around a plant, let's say, and then I'd send it love, and the aura would get much bigger. And I said, well, maybe I am seeing auras, you know, maybe I am. And I would see color, not all the time, you know, but the color developed more over time. And so I found I could see auras in color, and quite often, maybe there would be a break in the aura, or the aura would bulge in certain places, or the aura looked aggravated. The energy was moving faster in some areas than in others, which looked aggravated to me, you know, and so on. And so then I thought, okay, people in my classes wanted to see aura, so I showed them, not showed them, I told them what I did with my eyes, you know, and they would then see auras too. And what it is, it's a readjustment of the focus. For example, if I'm looking at my hand that's, you know, 6 inches away from my face, and then I look at the wall across the room, my eyes automatically refocus. Well, now with focusing to see auras, your intention is to see on a higher, finer level of energy, and so your eyes will refocus. And then what happens is people will see usually a haze, a glow, intensification of a color behind the person, or like cigarette smoke almost, the smoky stuff. And they're so excited, oh, I'm seeing it, that their eyes go back to its regular focus, okay? And right. So the aura appears to disappear. Well, it doesn't. It's your eyes refocus. So you right. get the feel of the focus. It's like when you learn to ride a two-wheeler. Most people learn, you know, with training wheels and your parent alongside of you, and you got the feel of the balance. And then you didn't need the training wheels any longer, and so on. So that's that kind of practice, getting the feel of what that focus feels like, so you can then automatically refocus to see on this higher, finer level of energy. And when I did this with the blind people, now some had light perception, and a lot of them did not. And, of course, the children, a lot of them didn't have eyes. Their eyes were removed because of cancer. When I asked them, particularly the one when I first started, I said, well, you know, you're totally blind. You have no light perception. How did you see the aura? He was in one of my regular classes. And he stopped and he thought for a moment. He rubbed his forehead and he said, well, he says, it's like I'm seeing it through the middle of my forehead. Well, this was a man who had never heard about the third eye and the pineal gland and all that, because he was another man who was dragged to the class by his sighted wife. And he just went along and cooperated because he was a nice guy. And he was able to see the auras. So you can see them with your physical eyes, or you can see them with your, what we refer to as the third eye.
Right.
And so it's easy. You know, it takes practice. People who really, you know, are trying, but that's part of the problem. You're trying. You have to relax into it rather than trying.
Right.
As a last resort, I tell them, find a lecture about a subject that bores you to tears, and go to that lecture and try and follow what the speaker is saying. Try and follow it. And you'll get so bored that you'll space out and your eyes will refocus.
And we'll be right back with more from Carol Ann Lieros here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into my interview with Carol Ann Lieros.
And you'll see the aura around the speaker.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a weird synchronicity, because the first time I was able to see that was in college during lectures when I was bored. That's funny.
Yeah, there you go.
I would just lose focus, and then next thing I knew, there was, you know, kind of this haze around people. And I was like, where is this coming from?
Exactly.
How cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, if you don't really have a motivation, like you just wanted to, well, it'll be fun, and you think of it once in a while to practice, you know, okay. But if you have a motivation, like I had Dr. John Perakos come and speak to my parapsychology and medicine class one time. He is a psychiatrist from New York City. And he told the story of joining an ESP class because he was interested, and he discovered he could see auras, so he practiced it. And so when a client came in, the aura gave him a lot of information about the person. Also in groups, when he did group therapy, it helped him a lot. When he did couples therapy, it helped him a lot. But he was very motivated to see auras.
Right.
The more motivation you have, the more you will practice, and the easier you'll find it will happen. And when people try too hard, of course, that causes tension. And you have to relax. You have to relax your eyes, the muscles around your eyes, and just relax into it is the only way I can describe that.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. And I couldn't agree more, because when I was in my early 20s and I got introduced to meditation, I became enthralled with it, not to where I was expecting these huge paybacks from it. I just relaxed into it and enjoyed it because it became my new favorite activity. And within a matter of months, I had made great progress in just gaining insights, even predictive capabilities, and just reaching these levels of meditation that, mm-hmm. in a matter of a couple months, it's like you can make incredible progress. It's just like any muscle, like you said, if you flex it more and use it, it becomes stronger and you can more easily access it.
That's right. And it's, you play with it.
Right, right.
Like if you're looking at the aura of your pet, you may find that your pet wakes up out of sleep and looks right at you like, did you call me? But they feel it.
Right, exactly.
I remember being in church when I was younger and staring at the back of someone's head, and they turn around and look right at me. They feel that energy from my aura.
Right. I think everybody can relate to that with the turnaround when you're thinking about or staring at somebody. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. And I saw something on your website. You offer things called psychic parties, which I found awesome because my mom has actually thrown one herself and she loved it, and all of her friends just had such a great time. And it's so insightful, to take away, an intuitive ability that you may not have been familiar with from, a social gathering. It's great. But so a lot of people might not be familiar with what a psychic party is. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, what I do, the way I do it, is if a person will get five of their friends together, and invite them over and have a space, like I do private readings. I don't do it in like a circle. Just like if they came to me for a reading, it's a half an hour long, and, they can tape record it and so on. So they need a space, maybe an extra room somewhere. And while the other people are out having coffee, tea, maybe a little snack, and enjoying each other, I'm giving a reading, and then that person goes out, and another one comes in. And then the person who's hosting the party gets their reading at no charge. And so they love that. They have fun. And it's always been a good time.
Yeah.
And people who, were afraid to go to a psychic feel that, their friend is recommending the psychic. So they're more relaxed about that. And it's in a more relaxed setting. They don't have to go someplace strange. So it works out very well.
That's great. What a wonderful service. And very few people are offering that, so good for you. And I want to thank you so much for writing these books. I personally have gathered quite a bit from them, and they're a great, great addition to my library. I'm very excited to have them in my possession. But I also want to thank you just for being a part of the ARE.
Well, as I said, it holds a special place in my heart.
Wonderful. And if for those who might be looking to attend your future conference or any of your future workshops or lectures, what do you hope that they take away from your workshops and your lectures?
Well, I hope that they take away several things. One is that if they have any fears, because I find some people are afraid because they think once they, pay attention to their own psychic ability, it's going to control them. It's going to take them over. And just
right.
If it is true. So to remove fears about it, to come away with resources about how to find out where research has gone on and the different subjects we're covering, like a lot of research has gone on about remote viewing, for example, psychometry, everything, so that they have some data they can refer to as they share it with other friends of theirs. Then, of course, the practical application of it, making it a natural part of their everyday living and incorporating it into their life in whatever ways are appropriate, and to enjoy the learning of it, because we have such a good time in these workshops, and we know the way the brain works, that if people learn in a fun way, the learning is going deeper, and they're retained longer.
Right.
So it's fun, it's in-depth, it's a wonderful, you know, years ago, I believed it was a gift that God gave some people and not the rest of us. But it is a gift that God gave us, but we all have the gift.
Right.
And so the more we use the gifts we're given, the more we're following what we're supposed to be doing with what we have.
Right. Wow. Thank you so much for all your contributions to the ARE and just to humanity in general. Thank you so much for doing what you do, Carol. And thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. I enjoyed being with you.
Well, that's all the time we have for the show this week. I want to thank my guest, Carol Ann Lieros, for sharing her wisdom with us. Don't forget to check out her website at carolannlieros.com. That's CarolAnnLieros.com. It's all one word. On her website, you can purchase her wonderful books, check out her speaking engagement schedule, and of course, schedule your own personal psychic party with a professional psychic. And don't miss your chance to spend time flexing your psychic muscles with Carol in person, as she will be our feature presenter at the upcoming ARE conference entitled You Are Psychic, the Legacy Conference. And this runs from March 17th through the 22nd in 2014, and it's going to be here in Virginia Beach. To register, you can visit our website at edgarcaycee.org, that is edgarcaycee.org, and then when you get on the website, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. On behalf of everyone hard at work here at the Association for Research and Enlightenment, I'm your host, Britton Bickerstaff, encouraging everyone to be the change you wish to see in the world around you. It all starts with you, here a little, there a little. Have a beautiful, love-filled week, everyone.